Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjo Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Here's Sunjo Gall.
Good morning and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is Integrating Supply Chain Post-M&A, Taming the Beast. Our guests for today's show are Neville Redemeyer and Dr. John Gatturner. Neville is the Senior Vice President and CIO with SoloCup, and John is an international supply chain thought leader and writer based in Sydney, Australia. Good morning, panel. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good night for you, I guess, John, because you are based in Sydney. How's the weather there?
It's beautiful weather over here, and it's midnight, so my rhythms, circadian rhythms, are starting to slow down.
Okay. And Neville, are you enjoying the summer yet? Has the summer approached? Because before you and I think the weather is the same.
I think so. I think Chicago has been a wonderful day today again.
Yeah, it's going to give us, what, 75, 80 or something?
That sounds right.
Yes, great. So now this topic that we picked up, I think most of the folks out there who are in IT and non-IT, it gives them jitters. As it is, we know supply chain is having issues where business actually demands very high availability and supply chain service levels, and they also want to cut the costs all the time. With that being said, and along with these mergers and acquisitions happening all over the place, we want to have supply chain integrated, and that makes the things worse. What are we doing? I mean, this is like a moving target, and it's going to get worse every time. Can we ever get to a point where we can say, yes, I have this act together, and I will be able to deal with it successfully? Neville?
You know, I think what's important is just understanding any merger and acquisition and the criticality of the various components. So just taking a step back, I think that one's got to look at the value chain versus just the supply chain in making a merger and acquisition successful. Obviously, efficient supply chains are critical, a critical component of any merger and acquisition, especially if that's the primary reason or one of the key reasons for the M&A. But many acquisitions fail exactly for the reason that you mentioned, is that there's such a substantial focus on cutting costs following mergers, while revenues and obviously ultimately profits then suffer. So the focus can be incorrect. Having said that, I think that if you've got a very, very efficient, effective supply chain and you go into an M&A, you can use that expertise to build on and obviously to include or incorporate the other company that's involved. I use the analogy of outsourcing. You know, if you have a situation in IT where your processes, your data center, whatever it is you're having a look at outsourcing, is not being run efficiently, effectively, and you try and outsource that, that is not going to solve, you know, those sins. So going into a merger and acquisition, you need to make sure that you've got the expertise, the knowledge, and that you're looking far broader than just the supply chain to be successful. Otherwise, that can lead to some of those failures we spoke about. And just some research by McKinsey shows that I think up to two-thirds of M&As don't provide the results that they were intended to.
John?
Yeah, there's a lot of value. I agree with what Neville's saying. There's been a lot of value destroyed over the last 10 or 15 years in mergers and acquisitions. And I think a lot of it's been because a lot of the senior executives are in denial about the influence of the human factor. I know that this is something that I think you're interested in exploring in this discussion here this morning. My view of it is that you've really got to look at the marketplace and start there. And if you're just a single company, you're looking at your own marketplace and you're reviewing your strategies. And, you know, my view about the supply chain is very strongly these days that things only move through supply chains or products and services under the influence of decisions made by people. And half of those people are on the outside, and we call them customers, and the other half are on the inside. And so what I'm taking a stab at this, and I'm saying about 50% of the impact of you know, how effective we are or how well aligned we are to our marketplace across the supply chain is really down to understanding human behavior on the outside, understanding human behavior on the inside. And this is an area where I'm afraid a lot of senior executives are in absolute denial. You know, there's a lot of emphasis being placed on you know, doing all sorts of market research in marketplaces, a lot of emphasis on putting together strategies, but very little understood about the sort of forces of darkness inside your own business. And so when you start to look at acquiring or merging with another business, you're just compounding the whole thing. You're bringing together the two companies, if you like, and maybe there's some overlap in the marketplace. And, I think this is where you've got to start. You've got to understand, which customers do you have in common. You've got to re-segment those customers along buying behavior lines. In other words, try and understand what the dominant buying behaviors are. And when you've re-segmented your market along those lines, then let that inform you so that you can reverse engineer your processes back through the joint organization. This will help you understand which technologies are appropriate, which ones you can rationalize away. It helps you think in terms of the types of subcultures that you need to keep in the business and those that you need to sort of perhaps do a bit of work on. And it also tells you a little bit about the type of leadership style that you're going to need in the marketplace. So I see this whole area of supply chain as being more of a business issue now. So when the two businesses get together, it's a business-to-business issue rather than a technical supply chain or logistics functional issue. And so I'm taking a much broader view and trying to incorporate this the impact of the human factor. In fact, interestingly, having read Thomas Friedman's book, which is a good book, the World is Flat, and even though he mentioned supply chaining as being one of the big sort of factors in the performance of companies these days, he didn't even mention what drove that performance, which is indeed the human factor underneath. So that's the way I address it these days, and use technology and processes and KPIs and all these sorts of things as the enablers to get to where we want to go.
Now, we have been talking, well, Neville, you brought up the point of outsourcing and thinking that that's cure-all and you can go after that and it'll help solve. Then there was another flavor that started popping out somewhere, which is hosted supply chain. I mean, we don't have our act together and then we expect somebody else to be able to create a generic enough platform which will work for literally everybody out there. And if you have to actually customize, then it takes away the very fact that it's a software as a service or it's a hosted supply chain. So I mean, are we thinking when we are bringing out these topics, or like these different ways of handling this, rather complex problem? Neville?
I think that, once again, I go back to the point that I made, that if you're looking at a merger and acquisition, what are the reasons for that, that taking place? Are there synergies that you're intending to get? Are there certain skill sets? What are those core competencies that you've got that you think you're going to be able to leverage? And really setting out a very, very clear business plan. I think John raises a very important point. These things are business driven. And whilst IT is an enabler, and obviously a very strong enabler, it's important to understand what are the driving factors and how your competencies play into that. You outsourcing your supply chain, unless you've been doing it for a while, is very difficult to do when you incorporate a merger or an acquisition. And obviously, we put those two things in the same bucket, but they are very, very different and mean very, very different things to how the business is going to change its processes or how it's going to perform under the new environment. An acquisition is probably easier to do, depending once again on what the objectives were around it. Mergers are more complex, especially when you talk about mergers of equals. What are the different processes that you're going to include? What are the best-in-class processes? Who is the dominant player? And running something with a committee-based decision process is going to take forever to achieve the results. So I just come back to the point that says you really need to know what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are and how you're going to develop those and look at the entire value chain. That's exactly what John was saying as well. The customers, internal, your cultures, your supply chain, inbound, outbound, logistics operations, and everything that goes around that. The cultures of the companies, I think, are critical. Global mergers and acquisitions are even more complex because you've got very different cultural approaches to solving issues. You've got country-specific regulations that apply. Just bringing this whole thing back to a supply chain focus once again is obviously where you have a lot of synergies coming out of, the guerrilla approach and having all the buying power and reducing costs from that perspective, But it gets down to more than that. It's also more efficiencies and effectiveness of the use of your technologies and your approach to manufacturing, rationalizing products, using more global reach. So those are all things that you specifically need to know. And as a company, you know, that's where your core competencies are, that's where your knowledge is, that's where your expertise is. And how you apply that to this newly formed company is what's going to be successful or not. And what you don't want is, once again, the distraction of this particular aspect to influence everything else that's going on. So neglecting your customers, because what happens at the end of the day, if your customers don't get the service, they're the ones that count. You know, they'll leave your services behind and go elsewhere where they get the attention and the focus they maybe had previously with you. So, I think that you need to understand exactly what you're doing. You need to document those processes, execute them, and have a very, very clear enterprise architecture as to what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things here is that it's a bit of a paradox, I think, Neville, that as we get into global, you know, supply chains and leads get longer and things get more complex, there is a tendency amongst some, I think a natural tendency amongst some managers to try and say, well, my God, it's getting all too complex. How do I manage this beast? Even just the original company, even before you start merging. And so there's a tendency to start saying, well, what we need here are, you know, standard processes, and you start sort of going down the one-size-fits-all approach. And the problem is that the more you go down the one-size-fits-all, where you're just giving one set of processes that makes the business manageable, in a world where markets are fragmenting on the outside, you end up getting further and further out of line with your customers. So the very thing that you set out to do, which is to reduce costs and take cost out and standardize processes and make the business more manageable, actually leads to you making the business worse to manage, more difficult to manage. You're creating more exceptions, you're more out of line with your customers, and the world just gets worse from there on. So, you know, this is why I couldn't get too far. About 10 or 15 years ago, I moved out of just looking at pure logistics and looking for answers and went to this business idea and came up with this concept of alignment, or what I call dynamic alignment. Now, I'm saying that if you want to make money on a sustained basis, you've got to line up your customers, your strategies, your cultures, and your leadership style. And clearly, if you're going to merge with someone, you've got to look sideways and say, well, are the customers or the markets, you know, compatible? What, as you say, do I have some distinctive competences that they haven't got, or have they got some that I want to buy? So as you put those strategies together and look and see how compatible they are, and you also look sideways at their people and the way they're structured, and sort of think about, you know, are the cultures going to clash, or, you know, are we going to be able to combine them in some way, and how the leaders going to look when they come together in one leadership team. And if you start thinking this way, you can start to anticipate some of the problems that we've tended to sort of walk into without recognizing in the last 10 or 15 years. I think in pure technology terms, the thing I love is I can't understand how people can even contemplate a merger and acquisition until they've built a network optimization model. I don't know whether Neville, you use this sort of technology. There are applications around, and you know, MIT and people like that have these network models, proprietary models that you can actually use as shells and build a sort of almost a customized model of your business, and then you could also build a bit of a model of the tentative takeover target or merger target, and start to see, you know, how you might even in anticipation, even before you merge, you could then start to anticipate where the synergies were going to emerge, and you know which distribution centers you thought you could rationalize, and where you might have to open new ones, and what sort of transport contracts you might need to get rid of, and other things. So using this sort of network optimization to completely and utterly understand every activity and every process in your business, and then start running scenarios based on, if I want to service these sorts of customers and I want to use those sorts of suppliers, what are going to be the types of costs for each of these types of supply chains? So, you know, I think we know a lot more now than we did 10 years ago, and I think we've got all the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle. It's a matter of starting to put them all together.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages. And let's talk about the fact that whatever we've spoken in this first part of the show are things which look obvious, and we hope that the executive management and the IT leadership and the business unit leadership understand it. But then, even though that is an assumption, and we hope that's the case, why are we seeing such a high rate of failure? Where are we going wrong? Who all and at what levels are not working together or are not able to work together? Let's talk more about this when we come back from the break, so please stay tuned.
From the stock market floor to your computer, you're listening to Voice America Business. Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
What I Want to Be When I Grow Up by Johnny Mike.
Dad, it's John. I got the promotion. We'll call him John Jr.
You'll speak over 500 million words in your lifetime, but none of them will be as important as the words you use to tell your six-year-old he has cancer. CureSearch.org connects you to the most comprehensive research and advice on childhood cancer and to other families who know exactly what you're going through. CureSearch.org. You're not as alone as you feel. Brought to you by CureSearch and the Ad Council.
If you're looking to improve sales results, increase revenue, acquire new customers, or just retain existing ones, listen to Sales Talk with nationally recognized sales and customer relationship management consultant, speaker, sales trainer, and author, Russ Lombardo. On Sales Talk, Russ provides insights and knowledge about today's best-selling techniques and methodologies. Learn about the latest sales-related software and tools to help organize your efforts for achieving more efficiency and get a better understanding of what services are available to improve sales results. On Sales Talk, Russ Lombardo and his expert guests get down to brass tacks and talk about what's needed today to succeed in sales. Whether you're a sales manager, sales professional, business owner, or entrepreneur, you'll benefit from the business insights, experience, and knowledge. Sales Talk with Russ Lombardo, broadcast each Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Sales Talk with Russ Lombardo, insights, experience, and knowledge at the click of a mouse.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjay Gall.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is Integrating Supply Chain Post-M&A, Taming the Beast. Our guests for today's show are Neville Redemeyer and Dr. John Gitterner. Neville is the Senior Vice President with CIO and CIO with Solo Cup, and Dr. John is International Supply Chain Thought Leader and Writer based in Sydney, Australia. Before the break, we spoke about different things that are causing people to not understand why this is going wrong and they're in denial, etc. But the question is, we see the failure rate, we see the money being lost, and people must be having their jobs on the line. So, I mean, if they can they afford to be in denial? That's the question here. John?
Yeah, but look, I'd like to make a comment on that. It's so obvious what's going wrong that it's like, you know, we've got our noses pressed up against the window, but we can't see what it is. And what it is that I think it all comes eventually down to the way we organize ourselves in organizations. That has a lot to do with it. What I mean by that is that we organize ourselves, 99% of organizations in the world are very functional, siloed. And if you look at that, you've got your marketing and sales people who look out into the marketplace, and they've got their ways and means of describing customers. You then come into the organization, you've got people who are putting together the business plans and the strategies and the various functional department strategies, and they all use a different language. And And as you come down in the organization and you start to look at the organization design itself and the people in it, and you start talking about culture and values and underlying assumptions about the way the business is run and the traditions and things like that, you've got some people who engage in that conversation, but not much. And then you get down into the whole area of leadership, and there's so little understood about leadership. There's, you know, more contemporary books written recently by Jack Welch and others. And so what you find in organisations is that you've got the sort of, I'm an engineer by first degree, so, you know, when I go to compare something, I like to compare apples and apples. But in what we're doing today, we're organising ourselves in such a way that different people in the organisation are using different metrics. And because the sales marketing people have got one metric, and you've got strategy people and others and functional people using different metrics, and production people using different metrics, and you know, when we talk about culture, we use different metrics and leadership. So consequently, we haven't got a hope in hell of ever getting alignment in our own sort of organisation, let alone trying to create some alignment across a broader supply chain. And then the whole thing is exacerbated by the way we educate people. And we put them into undergraduate and postgraduate university classes, and we throw all sorts of different subjects at them. But again, we don't spend the time integrating these subjects in business and telling them, how this all works and how all the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle go together. So consequently, you get people coming into organisations, you just go for the jugular, go for the short term, cut costs, slash and burn. I call it anorexia industriosa, you know, which is the excessive desire to be leaner and fitter, and leading eventually to total emaciation and death. And a lot of, you know, people like Chainsaw Dunlap and people like that, they did that and they got away with it. It was a very one-dimensional sort of way of managing. I'm pleased to report I'm seeing a new breed of manager now who's a much more rounded manager, a chief executive emerging, who's starting to understand these various sort of interfaces. So, you know, I'm optimistic about the future, but we've still got some left in the old generation who don't know which way to go.
Yeah, I think, Sandra, just the importance of understanding the devil being in the detail is what's going to make these things more successful going forward. You've got to make sure you're doing these for these mergers and acquisitions for the right reasons. Often, you know, there's stock market booms which drive paper values up and make M&A seem more valuable than they really are. And once you get into it, unless you are very, very focused and very, very detail-oriented and have substance behind the numbers that you've produced in validating or in setting up the reasons driving the merger or acquisition, you are definitely not going to deliver those benefits. The importance of, you know, bringing two supply chains together from two very different companies who probably have, you know, basically different numbering systems, never mind the way they produce different equipment, is so complicated that you really need a ton of planning for this thing to be successful. The other thing is that there's an expected ROI within months, whereas in fact these things usually take years. And if you don't monitor and measure this thing consistently throughout the process, making sure that all the synergies that you'd planned, all the benefits that you'd put out there are being delivered, then, you know, the success or failure of this thing is just going to become very, very clearly obvious. I mean, there's some big mergers out there, acquisitions out there, currently in the news, you know, where there are very, very smart people who worked on these things, who are working or not working. The Daimler Chrysler one is an example. BMW many years ago with the Rover acquisition and how unsuccessful that was. And then you have companies like South African Breweries, who were, you know, a South African-based company, the southern part of Africa, who today are the number two brewing company in the world. So some of these companies have got very, very clear success factors and have got a recipe for success. Others just, you know, I think underestimate the complexity and having a sound methodology for doing something like that.
Yeah. I mean, another company of a huge scale is Deutsche Post World Network, you know, the third-party services company now, which was originally the German Post Office, wasn't it, and Deutsche Post. And it's grown out of there. It took over the original DHL Express business, then it took over Danzas, and then it bought Airborne in the US, and then it bought more recently XL Logistics, which was a big acquisition. And this company, over the last 3 or 4 years, has stitched together probably the most dominant and comprehensive third-party services company in the world. It's got everything covered from Express, you know, right through to air freight, sea freight, contract logistics, you name it. And I know, you know, they've got, I think there's something like 200,000 people involved now. And even though on paper it looks an absolute dream acquisition, and it probably will end up being that way, I know that they're encountering huge interface problems and cultural problems as they try to, you know, get the companies that they've bought working together in unison, so, you know, for the sake of customers who, you know, out there need their services. So, you know, I look back at a lot of the efforts, and, you know, I think the South Africans, NSAB, has done a fabulous job, and I think it's probably Neville a lot to do with this sort of absolute dedication and focus that they, you know, went into that with. But a lot of other companies that don't do that end up struggling with that cultural change issue, and the whole thing implodes.
Well, and I think just the SAB example is one where they have not tried to force fit particular processes around the world. So, you know, from a systems perspective, they might not even want to standardize all the systems, because they understand that there are country-specific requirements, and, you know, each brewing facility might have its own key strengths. What they obviously look at is understanding where there are weaknesses in the particular environment, and then taking those best practices and moving them across into that new organization. And that's what they've done. They've taken people and put those people into key positions to assist with improving those operations. You know, where you've got system implications, where you want to consolidate systems, you can imagine the internal cultural conflict that goes on. You know, let's say, for example, you've got one company with Oracle and one company with SAP. You know, one of those two sets of resources are going to feel very threatened by who comes out the dominant system at the end of the day.
Yep.
So you can even have internal, you know, conflict going on, never mind the fact that you're actually, you know, trying to work this thing together. So there are many facets as to why you need to look at the cultural and just all the dynamics within the organization to make something like this successful.
Yeah, I mean, another great example, you know, you maybe think of it when I was listening to you there, is Nestlé. I mean, they embarked on a $2 billion SAP rollout, I think about 6 or 7 years ago, and rolled it right across the world. I think they're in their last year now. Across their linking all their 400 factories, etc. And there were a lot of people in that Nestlé network who didn't want to know about it, because for some of them it meant less flexibility. But for the whole system it meant, you know, a standardized one size, one version of the truth, which was going to make the business a lot better, not stronger globally, even though parts of it wanted to retain some of the old legacy systems. But gradually, I think, you know, knowing the Swiss and the management there, they've gradually got through these resistances, and they've got a pretty good system now that links the world. And of course, Nestlé is, you know, an incredibly successful company, so they've got to be doing something right doing that.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages, and let's look at a subtle difference that might be there when you are merging or you're acquiring a company. There may be differences in the way you would plan, the way you would execute it, the way you would have priorities of what stays and what goes. So let's talk more about it when we come back from the break, so please stay tuned.
...401s, stock, mortgage, retirement, wealth. We cover it all. Voice America Business.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Evol, delivering global IT talent. That's www.evol, A-V-V-A-L, evol.com. Visit today.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Wearing a football jersey doesn't make you an athlete. Just like riding a motorcycle doesn't make you a bad boy. And starting a business doesn't make you a true entrepreneur. True entrepreneurs with purpose transform their world. There is something qualitatively different about them. They are risk takers. They turn the ordinary into the extraordinary, transform the problems into solutions, and they are among the leading visionaries of our time. True entrepreneurs are, in other words, agents of change for our society and our world. Join Elizabeth Page on Equinexus, Empowering Entrepreneurs Talk Radio Show, which airs live every Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time on the Voice America Business Network. Equinexus will introduce you to entrepreneurs as innovators and world-class leaders. Listen every Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 12 p.m. Eastern, to meet the people who have done it. Meet the people behind the businesses and organizations that are changing the world, and you will realize how you can change your world too. Tune in every Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 12 Eastern, on the Voice America Business Network for Equinexus, Empowering Entrepreneurs, with host Elizabeth Page.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back to the show, folks. Today's topic is integrating supply chain post-M&A, taming the beast, and our guests for today's show are Neville Redemeyer and Dr. John Gaterna. Neville is the Senior Vice President and CIO with SoloCop, and John is an international supply chain thought leader and writer, and he's based in Sydney, Australia. The question that we had asked, that what are the subtle differences between you know, when you try to approach supply chain integration for a merger or an acquisition. But before we hit that question, let's try to explore a little bit further on the items which made companies successful when they did actually try to do supply chain integration in a merger or an acquisition situation. Because there are most people out there, they know that things fail most of the times, but they don't have right answers, or they don't have most of the times cues to where, what direction do they go. They have a blank sheet, so we could possibly provide some examples to them. Neville?
So I think that what's, you know, trying to figure out what is the recipe for success is very difficult. You know, if we had that answer, I think, you know,
we would have said billions of dollars, right?
Exactly. So, you know, the thought is I think you've got to look at particular situations. There's lots of assistance that one can get out there. There are lots of consulting companies who do this thing every day. You know, day in and day out, they have their thoughts and their recipes for success and their approaches. You know, I've seen companies that have gone into the whole due diligence process, thought that they would have the right answers when they came out of it, and have absolutely failed around that. And, you know, there's a company that I know that, you know, has had hundreds of consultants involved in the post-merger restructuring, especially from a systems perspective, spent millions and millions of dollars on something that was just absolutely not going to work. They had to then take a step back, reevaluate every single component of the business, not just the IT world, but, you know, the sales, the whole value chain I referred to earlier, and reassess how they were going to, you know, scorecard every single component with the success and the possible savings that they were going to get and growth that they were going to get. They then took, as I said, a complete step backwards and looked at implementing an ERP system, which in itself is a very, very complex situation. But that was one way to get the processes aligned, because they were very, very similar in the products that they were making, to get just simple things like product numbers, material numbers, synchronized so that they could leverage the one company situation, and then go forward with a pretty complex implementation and also change the culture at the same time of both of the companies, because often, you know, the companies would talk about their particular cultures and their particular way of doing things versus the new company, which is what they should have been striving for. So, you know, everyone is unique, and I think having the right expertise involved in every single aspect of the merger or acquisition and doing the due diligence, setting up the right measures, making sure that you measure and monitor those on an ongoing basis, and taking corrective action where it's not, is critical. But that's a key leadership thing. And John mentioned earlier around the changing leadership styles and approaches. I think that this is fundamental to the success of either a merger or acquisition.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely right. I mean, when I go back to my alignment and I look at it in the older and grayer I get, I realize that the two really important pivotal points or endpoints in anything, whether if it be a merger or an acquisition, we'll come back to that later, is that the leadership at the time is in line with and empathetic with the marketplace. If you get those two things right, you tend to have a chance to get the strategies and the cultures right. If you get a leadership that gets behind its mind, you see it, and I won't go into this too far, but you see it in the political arena, where political leaders start off being apparently in line with their constituency, and then the constituency moves away from them, and for some reason they stick with strategies that, you know, open up airspace between them and their constituency, and eventually, you know, it's the same with any company. Too much red blood, so the board changes the chief executive. So, you know, I'm a great believer in, you know, one of the most important decisions you make is getting the right CEO in place, and that's a board decision. And if he's the CEO that's the right guy and up with the marketplace as it is today, he will tend to develop his team, build strategies, build cultures, et cetera, which are appropriate. But all these things are moving. I mean, I look at my experience across about 75 technology implementations, a lot of them around about the time of the Y2K. And what we noticed then, you know, with a lot of ERP implementations and others, is that they were just slam dunked in, where you just went, you know, Neville, you know what I mean? It's just a straight systems replacement. People would just replace the existing legacy system with, say, an ERP system, but there was no real value created. And the organisation really, in some cases, went backwards. Then there were those organisations that did at least go a bit further and look at their marketplace and think, revisit their strategies and re-engineer their processes, and at least their key processes they re-engineered, and then they put their technology over the top to institutionalise those processes. And a lot of those saw an improvement in revenue, you know, 1 to 3%, cost of goods went down 1 to 2%, overheads reduced 1 to 2%, inventories reduced 5 to 20%. But then the really good organisations that I've seen are the ones that I call a real transformation, where they really went deeply into revisiting their strategies. And then as a result of that, they changed all their processes and re-engineered their organisation and made sure that it was aligned with and supporting their strategies. And these sorts of organisations, it's a big task to do that, and it's a big change job, but they start to see revenue uplifts of between 5 and 10%, cost of goods go down 3 to 8%, overhead reduces 3 to 5%, and inventories can go down 25 to 30, 50%. But it's a lot to do with that getting the right sort of processes re-engineered into the business and then putting the technology over the top.
Now, one thing which always comes to mind, it's like an issue, what we will call is a catch-22. While we know the implementation team and the folks who are in IT and business units who are supposed to get the supply chain working, they work very hard to make this happen. Now, on the other hand, executive management is looking for a quick ROI when the M&A actually happens, and a supply chain usually is the biggest slice in that pie from where the ROI could come from. Then, when we are supposed to be making things happen and we want to get it done yesterday, supply chain is somehow not cut out for that. And when it doesn't get it yesterday, then they start becoming, you know, anxious and think they would almost force people to start cutting corners. And then that's where things could fail. So how could we handle this catch-22 situation? John?
This is interesting, and this gets back to the point I think Neville raised earlier on outsourcing. You're absolutely right. One of the reasons why Wall Street analysts are taking a lot more interested in supply chain these days, and you see articles almost every day in the Wall Street Journal or in the Financial Times in England, is that they finally realise that supply chain, if you define it, in a more liberal way, 80% of the fixed assets in a company are probably supply chain assets, if you include factories as well as all the other stuff and distribution centres and so on. And at least 50 to 60% of the other assets, variable costs, are also related to supply chain performance, the inventories themselves, accounts receivable, things like that. And that's why as analysts are looking much harder these days at what chief executives are saying they're going to do when they say they're going to take $5 billion out of their supply chain over the next 5 years. Okay, they might believe them for the first year, but as soon as they miss one of the milestones, then you notice the share price gets badly affected. So I think it's becoming important now for these executives to realise to do the right sort of analysis and keep their credibility. I've seen a number of cases here in Australia and overseas in England and elsewhere where promises have been made to the marketplace, they haven't hit their milestones, and the share prices have been affected 20 or 30%. And I think to do it, you need quite fancy and sophisticated network modelling. You've got to do a lot of internal scenarios. You've got to make good decisions about which parts of the business you're going to outsource. And you just don't outsource because it's difficult, but you outsource because someone can do the job better than you. So there's a lot of decisions like that that need to be made. And yes, you need some quick wins early, but don't sacrifice the longer term strategy for it.
Neville?
Yes, I think that what's important is just taking a very prudent and pragmatic view of what it is you're going to deliver, when, and how, how feasible that is. And then looking at how each component is going to be delivered, be it, improved sales and communication with customers, what you're going to do around your supply chain, how you're going to strategize around getting better prices for your raw materials, for example. How are you going to get efficiencies out of maybe product rationalization? That's one of the key things, is just how many SKUs do you have after the acquisition or the merger? How are you going to rationalize those to become more efficient and effective, rather than carrying on just proliferating and creating more of a mess just around your product lineup? So without going into each component, I think you get the idea that you've got to really know, what you're doing. And I think management, once again, and the leadership around one of these critical mergers or acquisitions is what's going to drive the success or failure. Often what happens is you can have two relatively small organizations with leadership who've done a fantastic job within those organizations and within the size of that organization, and yet when you put these companies together and you start getting into the several billions, hundreds of billions of dollars, the whole picture changes. Running a huge company like that is very different, and if you think that you can still run it the same way as you did, the former company, which might be right, but just requires different skills and different approach, you're not setting yourself up for success. And I think the market has got very wise to a lot of these mergers and acquisitions, and they now look behind, the rosy picture that gets painted up front when one goes into a merger or acquisition. And so that leadership team setting up a very, very valid plan that doesn't, immediately hit over the first, 10 months or whatever it is, but ideally, extends over, I would say, depending on the size, but anything from a year for some results, but realistically 2 to 3 to 4 years, and probably even 5 years, is what's going to drive the success, and just one that's well thought out. Because if you're going to try and change everything on day one, that's really very, very difficult. It's just not feasible to do that. System implementations, for example, can take years in just a regular company, never mind in this new company, which has probably got two very, very different cultures and just infrastructures and everything around it, probably. So, there's other forms of this, and I think we're going to probably get into some of these discussions around differences in a merger versus an acquisition. Sometimes it's just a good idea to leave the acquired company alone. It might be a very, very good company that does things very well, to learn from it and just see how you can get, you know, very, very limited or key focused synergies out of what the other company does. Best practices maybe, purchasing, procurement processes, you know, what is it that you can learn from the other company and just develop your two companies in a different way. The merger is obviously the more complicated one, because where you are going to change processes, core processes maybe, change systems, that becomes a lot more complicated, requires a lot more integration, planning, and understanding of the total business.
Yeah, I think just a final comment on that, you know, I think it's very important if you're, and one of the things I see today is some very successful companies are suffering because they're growing through the, you know, through their own success, they're growing very, very, very strongly, and they're having troubles keeping up with that growth. And in some cases, they've gone backwards and made some very smart acquisitions of, you know, very strategic suppliers. They may have had some suppliers that are supplying critical components or something. The suppliers are not really reliable, and to, you know, really set up the whole, you know, to underpin the whole thing, they've gone backwards, if you like, vertically integrated backwards and bought that supplier and secured their future. Some other companies I know have gone forward and done the same thing downstream, where they've secured some of the distribution channels through buying distributors or buying other companies. So, you know, when I see companies doing that, and, you know, and there's a real rationale for it, I like that.
Now let's come back to that small question we asked before the last break, which was basically finding the nuances between what you do or how you approach integration for supply chain, for a merger or an acquisition. Are there any quick pointers that we can provide? Neville?
You know, it's interesting to be able to look at a particular situation and then highlight what those pointers are. To me, it's all around the planning and how you set that up that's going to make it successful or not. It's very difficult to come up with a, you know, just a recipe, because we're talking about two very different acquisitions or two different transactions here, the merger versus the acquisition. And then you're also looking at what the reasons are behind what that merger acquisition is going to be for. You know, is it economies of scale? Increased market share? Is it cross-selling, synergies, taxes, you know, geographical diversification? I mean, there's various reasons as to why these companies would be doing that. And based on what it is, you've got to take the situation by situation to analyze and, you know, and to see what the core focuses are and what your direction is going to be.
My comment on that one would be, Sanjog, that the one thing that you should look at and hasn't been looked at, I'll use the term cultural compatibility. If you get two companies merging and they have quite strong cultures in their own right and they come together, you can have a situation where 5 years down the road you've still got those subcultures from those original companies alive and well inside the companies, inside the merged company, and they're fighting each other. You know, it's like oil and water. And that's the worst possible outcome, because the distraction from that just detracts from the bottom line. If, on the other hand, you've got one company that's, you know, got a particular, let's say, a very outcome performance-driven culture that takes over a sort of more sleepy type of company that's more driven by internal types of group culture, then that, the first culture might eat up but the second culture and make sure that the, if you like, the dynamic or the bias is in the right place and you don't end up with that sort of Mexican standoff. And that's one of the worst things that you can have in a business. When you're acquiring another business, you're probably looking at the same sorts of things, but it's not as difficult as when you merge, because very often the merger, you're not too sure who the senior party is.
I think one can almost use the analogy of, you know, a good bottle of white wine and a good bottle of red wine. You can't mix those two together sometimes to get a good bottle of wine, right? So you have to make that assessment.
Yeah. You know, I reckon it's the horses for courses, what you're really saying, Neville. You know, the smart companies, when they buy companies or merge companies, they either do a lot of re-engineering or they don't do any, and, you know, they learn from each other and so it goes on. Yeah, but you just can't take one rule anymore, can you?
Nope.
Now, we always talk about best practices and things of that nature. You know, there are so many standards bodies which come up across, you know, all across the world or globe, you know, that the standard doesn't remain a standard at all. And you don't know which one to pick. It becomes like a standard evaluation as you do a software evaluation. I mean, that should not be the case. If it's a best practice, they should have some lowest common denominator and maybe tweaks which would be specific to an industry vertical or things of that nature. Don't we have a similar situation in the supply chain integration-related processes which we want to put in place?
Yeah, look, I'll take a lead on that one. I'm very vocal about this. I think one of the big disasters in the last 10 years has been people's absolute, unequivocal embrace of the, Kaplan and Norton balanced scorecard approach. And the trouble in the early days of that was that people were more or less asked to collect all sorts of data on just about anything that moved, you know, financial data, customer data, performance data. And we spent so much time doing that that you know, when we got it all together, we weren't too sure what it all meant. What I'm arguing these days is that if you look in the marketplace, and one of the big breakthroughs for me in the last few years is that I've discovered rather late in life that human behavior isn't as chaotic as everyone thought, that there's patterns out there. And what you find in many marketplaces is that there are customers, it doesn't matter what the product or service is, that there will be customers out there who really like brand and you know, want a relationship. So in those cases, best practice and KPIs is all about loyalty and retention of the customer and the relationship, maintaining the relationship with the customer. Where you have other customers in the same marketplace who have a different buying behavior, maybe, you know, they're just in it, they don't want all that relationship stuff, they just want low cost, lean, mean type of product delivered, then the sorts of things that we need to look at are best practices and KPIs in the areas of delivery and full on time, forecast accuracy, you know, conformance to policy. Those things might have been in the list, on the previous list, but they were lower down than, say, the relationship things. And more you see organizations now and customers coming into marketplaces in fashion and just about everything you can think of, where customers are turning up and they're wanting things like instantaneously. And so there's a demand for instant response. So organizations have to develop another type of supply chain. We'll call it the agile supply chain, which is, in terms of IT, it has, all sorts of sophisticated application systems to help us make the right decisions and that. And the KPIs here and the best practices here were all about absolute speed of response and those things. So the point I'm making is it's really what we've been saying all through this talk is it's a horses for courses sort of thing, and it doesn't matter whether you're in a single organization or whether you're merging or even if, you know, you're acquiring companies, you've got to go out there and look at the marketplace, see of a customer, to try and make sure that you understand the way the market is structured in terms of the way customers want to buy the product, and then start reflecting that internally in the way you behave yourself.
Never.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you know, your customers are the ones who are going to determine whether your company is a success or not, whatever their buying patterns are, whatever their focuses are and their loyalties or not. They're the ones who are going to determine whether it's been successful, what are their service levels, what are they getting out of it versus, you know, what you thought you were going to get out of it.
Yes. And the problem is that too often we segment these customers in terms of how big they are, how small they are, or how profitable they are, or what colored eyes they've got, or they live in one state versus another. And whilst all those things are important to know, it doesn't actually inform us very much about, you know, what are their preferences, what's their preferred way of being serviced, and therefore what can we do to align with that. And if I think this is the new word, alignment. If we can start to get people, everyone in the organisation, understanding that everyone who does a job in the organisation, doesn't matter where they sit in what department, they're all there to understand and align with the customer's buying behaviour, we're going to do a lot better, or those companies are going to do a lot better in the years to come, because they'll get rid of a lot of the over-servicing that's going on. See, the problem with many companies today is we've got a lot of over-servicing going on, and we've got a lot of under-servicing, and the trouble is we don't know which is which.
I do think as well, and I'm not sure that you're saying that the whole balanced scorecard is not the right thing. I think it is. I think
I'm saying bias. I'm saying I'm using a sort of slightly semantic thing.
Right.
Neville. I'm saying let's go for bias scorecards rather than so-called balanced scorecards. Yeah.
And I think, you know, once again, it's a tool and it's how that tool is used. I think that you can drive great behaviors by measuring the right things, but you can drive very, very bad behaviors by measuring the wrong things. I mean, that's obvious.
Yeah.
I've noticed that if you set very, very clear measures and behaviors that you want to drive, achieve those far better than if you don't, you know, if you don't have any measures, right?
Yes, exactly.
And the balanced scorecard, if it really looks, if you look at the four components, I mean, if those things are really balanced and you really are focusing on your human capital management and all the other components, you definitely will get, I think, a good sense of where you're going in this. And one of them has to be, I think, maybe a slightly stronger, and that is your customer measurement.
Yeah, yeah.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, I would like to thank you, Neville and John, for sharing your experience and insight pertaining to dealing with challenges and supply chain integration-related problems that we have, especially in case of mergers and acquisitions.
My pleasure.
Pleasure as well.
Thank you again. Now, with so many moving parts, as we already know, in supply chain and heavy human intervention, there sure is a lot of uncertainty attached with respect to supply chain integration. And with multiple standards and methodologies proposed, we don't know what to pick and run with. Supply chain integration, to me and to most of us, is a disruptive event for a business, which could be converted into an opportunity provided we plan ahead. We build the right team, we build the right mindset, get the required buy-in from the constituents, as we discussed, and carry out an impeccable execution of the plan, because devil isn't there. This sure is a tall order, we all see that, but you know, business and life are not easy. Have you gone through supply chain integration due to mergers and acquisition in your organization? Please share your story with us at views@ciotalkradio.com. That is views@ciotalkradio.com. Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjay Gaul, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Join Sanjay Gaul next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, for another hour of CIO Talk Radio.